Harvey Weinstein continued. The fallout continues from Hollywood Harvey Weinstein. Because, you know, there was a Hurricane Harvey. Now there's a Hurricane Harvey. Hurricane Hollywood Harvey. What's happening here with this, with all the accusations? And now there's this campaign out there that 500,000 people, women, tweeted out yesterday. Me too. Yeah, all these women have been sexually harassed, been sexually abused, have been hit on by their bosses, et cetera, et cetera. This is a generational problem. And it has a couple of things, or there were a couple of reasons why you should be more inclined to believe these women than to call them a bunch of gold-digging sluts and saying that, wow, they're only doing it because Al-Qaeda told them to do it. No, I think that there's probably something there. And the reason I say that is because pornography teaches young men to treat women like objects. It teaches old perverts like Harvey Weinstein to treat women as body parts. It's all you are, ladies, unfortunately. To the average metrosexual millennial loser out there, you, quite frankly, are a below the belly button, above the thigh piece of anatomy. That's the sum total of your existence. And that's a sad state of affairs. Young men do not consider intellectual qualities. They do not consider the support qualities. It's why God created marriage, is because men and women complement one another in ways that you don't need me to explain, but it's a complementary relationship. With the way we look is different. The way we think is different. The way we approach topics, the way we approach issues and crises is different. And that's good. You know the old saying, two heads are better than one. Well, I think that applies, actually. It was probably created by some successful parents. Well, two heads are better than one, because they are. Unless the two heads are two heads of heretics, well, then, no, you're worse off than you were, because now you have double the error, right? So the New York Times has this story today. Harvey Weinstein's fall opens the floodgates in Hollywood. Now, the floodgates that are about to open are not open because of Harvey Weinstein. The floodgates that are about to open were opened by Hugh Hefner. The floodgates that are about to open were opened by Bob Guccione. The floodgates that are about to open were opened by Madonna. The floodgates that are about to open were opened by the softcore porn peddlers in rock and roll music, and now, unfortunately, in country music. There was a guy in the chat room earlier at MikeChurch.com that was going like, hey, why is country music softcore porn? I'm new here. And he was informed by 5 or 6 members in the chat room, country music is softcore porn. Go listen to it. You'll hear it. It's all about panties and T-shirts on the floor and getting drunk and shacking up and, oh, girl, I can't wait to have you on in the bed of my truck, oh, girl. I can't wait for you this Saturday night, oh, girl. We're going to drink a beer. I can't wait to do tequila shots with you and wake up in the morning. It's disgusting and embarrassing. But this is wholesome American music, country music. Like Hades it is. Now, there may be some out there that are still making country music like that. Some. Very few. As women become sex or objects of exploitation, it only makes sense that men are going to take advantage of the exploitation. So what are you going to have? Fewer families. Smaller families, and the unlikelihood that there's actual contact and not just single person occurrences with pornography, more abortions. You're going to have contraception. Why? Because the marital act no more today. It's not about children. No, it's about sex in the city. It's about having multiples of orgasms, multiples of partners. Multiples of affairs. It's about, hey, let me see how long I can get away with adultery. All this has been brought to you by Hollywood and Capitol Records. And now they feign shock and outrage. Oh, we didn't see that one coming. Some of us did. And now there's all these other stories. There's this hashtag out there on Twitter, Me Too. 500,000 women took to Twitter to say that this had happened to them and that and the other. Now there's Bill Cosby. And you got all of these things going on here. I asked a question earlier when I was talking about Stephen Paddock, the Satan's postulant. That means he's in training. He was in training. The Las Vegas, Nevada, demonically inspired killer. I asked a question earlier. Do you think that he picked a place called Sin City on a Sunday by accident? What do you think, or more specifically, put it another way, the devil knows what he's doing. He's good at this. He's been tempting and sending people, assisting people in getting to hell for a couple of millennia now. 5-6 millennia. He's gotten good at this. He knew how to choose someone who would be a denizen, a devotee of Sin City. To give the devil his due, like Charlie Daniels says, and the devil went down to Georgia. To give the devil his due, I bet a fiddle of gold to get your soul to think I'm better than you. Right? Give the devil his due. He picked Paddock, made him a useful idiot, executed the plan flawlessly. There's not a private investigator or a cop on earth that can figure any of this out, but some little radio show host here in Mandeville, Louisiana, as you heard in the first hour of the show, and you've heard many times before, has given you motive, I've given you logic, I've given you preparation, I've used the evidence for this. I use the evidence again today that points to supernatural cause. No, aliens didn't do it. No, it wasn't a poltergeist per se. No, it wasn't the ghost of Jimmy Hoffa. It was a very cunning, conniving, and very happy right now and successful demon or demons. What a great conspiracy they pulled off. Sin City, Sunday night. Think about it. Is that your evidence, Mike? No, that's in the summary that I give to the jury before I send the case to them. Now, why does all this matter? Well, it's all tied to our lack of chivalry. It's all tied to our lack of modesty and to our lack of not only dignity, our lack of acting dignified, but our failure now, these days, to expect dignified acts from others. When I go into an airport now, I do not expect to be treated as a dignified human soul. I expect to have my eyes visually and assaulted by every miscreant that decided that walking 3.5 miles in front of 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 or however many thousand people you're going to meet at an airport on any given day, that the first impression you want to make of them is you in a pair of pajama pants and a tank top. I dress for, or you in a pair of cargo short pants with your sandals on, with your big fungus-laden toenails exposed for the world. Oh, that's something I want to fly next to. What a great impression that is. No consideration for the dignity of my eyes. None. I dress the way I want. I dress for comfort, really. I dress for the comfort of the soul. I dress so that when I'm in the presence of others, if they're worried about my, or if they're looking at my dress, hopefully, they're looking at, I picked my colors appropriately, I buttoned the buttons, if I had one broken, I sewed it back on, I don't have any ginormous freaking food stains, you can't tell what I had for lunch 3 weeks ago on my shirt. Why? Just a little modicum of respect for you. Which is why attire has always mattered. That's why fashion matters, and it always has. doesn't mean that you have to go out and buy a tuxedo for every day of the week. Well, there are simple measures that men and women can take to dress dignified. Now, again, this all goes back to the order being out of control. In some instances, it's the order of the affairs. In some instances, it's just the ordering of the mind. This is an instance where it is it's a combination of both. It's the ordering of the affairs, and it's an ordering of the mind. You would expect that men would be the leaders here. Even the miscreants called ZZ Top were smart enough to figure out that, yes, every girl is crazy about a sharp-dressed man. Not for the reasons those perverts or whoever wrote that song thinks. I told my brother this one time. If you want to wean yourself off the softcore porn that is classic rock, you want a reason to do it, and you're a ZZ Top fan, there's not a hit record that those guys ever had that's not a reference to a certain sex act.
Well, you know the saying goes, once you go Bach, you don't go back.
Wish we had some Bach. There's not. I told my brother this, and he went, I never thought about it. And I started listening. He goes, I went to see them live, and I started, and I can't remember what song he told me. He was singing along in the crowd, and he went, oh, my brother was right. Yes. So in regards to this, what is missing from today's society? Ladies, you know this. Virtuous men. Men of heroic virtue. I'm going to say something to you that's going to shock some of you. And you can send me your hate mail, kingdude@mikechurch.com. I wish someone of you would send me an email and take one of these free Founders Pass memberships off our hands. You know, it make us feel a lot better about what we do here every day. When we get free samples out, people would go like, hey, I want one. kingdude@mikechurch.com. Men are put into a position every time we go into public. If you're trying to live the life of heroic virtue, get ready for this because you're going to be put into this position. Rob Hughes was talking about one of our chatters on the chat room at mikechurch.com. He took his son to the Georgia game, the Georgia versus Missouri game at the stadium in Athens. Beautiful stadium. I've actually been there, by the by, to the game, and he was shocked at the level of dress of the co-eds. There's nothing, Rob, get used to it, brother, sister. That's the way girls dress. Believe me, my daughters go to Southeastern Louisiana and LSU, and I go to LSU, and I went to a game last year, and I spent a lot of time looking down at the ground. Now, I'm going to say something to you that may surprise some of you, shock some of you. As a decently dressed, I'm told, decent-looking, middle-aged male, there's not an instance where, in public, I am not presented, I'm talking about in crowds, I am not presented with the opportunity to sin. There's not one. Like Padre Pio was, or Saint Pio was asked one time, are you ever tempted? Is it hard for you? And he goes, every minute of every day. God never makes these pillars of steel. Well, he does. In rare cases, St. Thomas Aquinas. He doesn't make these pillars of steel in men because we're all blessed with that biological capability to act upon our attraction to the other sex and in union and cooperation with God to create the next generation, to bring new souls, new life into this world. That's the way it's supposed to work. It works pretty good. So none of us are immune to this. The point is, there's not a single time. Now, pre-reversion me would give in to these things. Think about it. Engage in it. Might even try to participate in it. So I know what that temptation is like. I've been there, done. As a matter of fact, it's not a day that goes by, if that were to happen to me today, where I wouldn't have to stare at a dark spot in the terracotta on the floor. But I do that not because I want to be a hero, but I do that because I want the young women that I am blessed to be, or whatever women, blessed to be in the company of, to know that there is safety among men. I know what I said, among men. I didn't say that there's safety among millennial men, because there probably isn't. I didn't say there's safety among the generation after the millennials, because there probably isn't. Well, there may be some, and only because they satisfied their urges this morning when they woke up, opened their computers up, went and got 20 minutes worth of porn, figured this out for yourself, guys, and went and took a shower. This is the world in which we live in. It is a world driven by the actual sex act, not by love, not by cooperation or dignity or anything of that sort, driven by the actual execution, or should I say the culmination of the act. Being as that is a fleeting thing, if it's not done to make children, then for what purpose is it done for? It's why it's a sin. It's why it's mortally sinful to engage in it. But how many young boys are taught this? Listen to this. This is published back in 2016, The Fading of Three Christian Virtues by David Carlin. He lists three virtues that are gone. Before Christianity, chastity had been a virtue, a feminine virtue only. Men were expected to be temperate in their sexual activities, but not truly chaste. It wouldn't be held against a man that he committed fornication or visited a brothel, and not much held against him if he committed adultery or had homosexual relations with a slave. But if he neglected military or political duties because he was distracted by an adulterous affair, that would be held against him. By contrast, it was very shameful for an unmarried woman to lose her virginity, or for a married woman to have sexual relations with anybody except her husband, except in Sparta, where women were free to commit adultery in order to help populate the city. Lucretia was a model Roman woman. She was so chaste that she committed suicide rather than live with the shame of having been raped. So when Christianity made chastity a virtue, it was not introducing an entirely new virtue into the world. Rather, it was universalizing what had been a merely feminine virtue. It was making chastity a virtue for men as well as for women. This was something new. Despite the insistence of modern feminists that Christianity, especially Christianity in its Catholic form, is a masculine religion, a good cause can be made that Christianity is a highly feminized religion, a religion that promotes chastity, a feminine virtue, to the status of a universal virtue, and a very high virtue at that, can hardly be called a masculine religion. Humility had been found in the world prior to the coming of Christianity, but it was not a virtue. It was simply an attitude appropriate for a slave. Christianity converted humility, the slave-like attitude, into a virtue. And there's number three. In pre-Christian days, people were expected to love their neighbors, or at least to love their fellow townsmen. But this was a love based on the principle of reciprocity. That is, I would be generous to you in the expectation that you would, in turn, be generous to me. But Christianity introduced a new kind of generosity, a non-reciprocal kind. As a Christian, you were expected to be generous to others, even without the expectation that you would be paid back.